Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Before we get started today, I'd like to thank our sponsors, the folks over at Markham Search, LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, specializing in both executive and contingency search, as well as providing temporary staffing solutions. Today, speaking of jobs and finding solutions, we have joining us on the show Michelle Lando. Michelle is a native San Franciscan and is a certified professional resume writer and founder of Write Styles Online. She has a passion for helping others present the best version of themselves, both on paper and in person, and works to polish individuals' application packages and personal style, aiming to help create a perfect personal branding package. Write Styles presents tips to enhance your resume, professional appearance, and boost your confidence. Thank you so much for joining us today, Michelle.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
You know, it's funny. I can't believe this. I'm so happy that Allison Garrido had connected us because it occurred to me after 2.5 years of doing the show, we never had a whole entire show on resume writing. So I'm very excited to be doing this subject with you today.
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, she's actually connected me with some of the best people. So I think this will be great. I'm really excited to share this information.
Yeah. So tell our listeners just a little bit about your background and your history and how it was that you came to become a professional resume writer.
Thanks. Yeah. You know, it's never something I saw myself doing. I got a degree in business management economics. And from there, I was a clothing stylist. And I've always wanted to kind of meld my love for fashion and business. So I really wanted to figure out a way that I could help people dress professionally. And from there, I went into recruiting. And that's really when I saw people struggling with writing resumes and just overall presenting a perfect personal branding package. So people were calling me, asking me how to write a resume, what they should wear for their interview. And that's kind of where this idea for Write Styles came about, you know, just helping people present themselves all around professionally through their resume, through their LinkedIn profiles, through their professional appearance when they go to interviews. And in December of 2014, I got certified as a professional resume writer. And I worked at the recruiting company on the side for almost 2 years until I went completely on my own. And that was in June of 2016. And from there, now I work with clients on creating resumes, LinkedIn profiles, you know, you name it, I do it. I just help people present themselves professionally and really create a cohesive personal brand.
That's great. And so tell me, what makes a good resume? What does a good resume look like?
Well, you know, there's one thing that I really like to drill into everyone is that I can give you, you know, aspects of a great resume, but really there is no one perfect formula for everyone. The key to a great resume is really creating an effective document that's based on the jobs you're interested in applying to. So it's completely impossible to have one resume that works for everything. You want a resume that will highlight what you bring to the table, highlights results, and really is catered, again, to those jobs you're interested in applying to. So highlights what they want to see.
Got it. And so I know one of the mistakes I've seen a lot of job seekers make is that they do tend to use one resume for everything. And I think one of my teachers who taught me about this a long time ago had suggested doing something called a master resume. Is that still a concept that people use?
Absolutely. So when I work with clients, one of the things that I always ask them to do are send me a few different kind of jobs that they're interested in applying to. So my goal when I create a resume is to create essentially what you're saying, a master resume, a foundation resume that can kind of work as your base resume. Again, that highlights the kind of things that those particular jobs are interested in seeing, whether that's results, you know, sales volume, anything like that, how many people you work with or manage. And then you can really go in and customize your resume and integrate those keywords based on each specific job you're interested in applying to.
And so what are some of the attributes that most employers, irrespective of the content, what are some of the things that people are going to look for on a resume when it comes to formatting?
When it comes to formatting, my general rule of thumb is absolutely you need your contact information up at the top. That's your full name. I actually only say you need your city and state at this point. People, it's really a personal preference whether you want to include your full address or not. But again, I really think city and state is the most important. Your phone number and a professional email address. From there, I always say a headlining statement is a great starting point for a resume. It's kind of like what would have been called an objective before, but I always like to describe it as a snapshot of your career and kind of what someone can expect from the resume. From there, I always go into a skills matrix so that someone can quickly see what qualifications you have. And then I tend to go into the professional experience, and I actually put education at the bottom.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that because I have mixed feelings about that. I think that education should go at the bottom unless it's a prerequisite for a job. Like, for example, if you need a master's degree or something or some sort of certification that an employer needs to see, sometimes I've found it can be helpful to have it at the top. And then the other time I've noticed that it can be helpful for employers to see it at the top is if somebody is a recent graduate, because if you don't really have substantive work experience, then seeing that you graduated in the last 3 to 5 years, that's kind of what we would consider a semi-recent graduate, that's going to have the employer be a little bit more empathetic towards your lack of work experience, so to speak.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And it's interesting you point out the certifications aspect of it, because that's my fault that I didn't say that, but I actually like to put the certifications always up towards the top, you know, right under that skills list, because most of the time, certifications and specialized training, so even that could be internal training that you've had, that will actually make you stand out, especially if you're in a job with more technical skill. Having those certifications, whether that's a project management professional certification or, you know, a Google AdWords certification or an SEO certification, whatever it is, oftentimes that, in my opinion, will push you over the edge for someone that doesn't have those certifications and that hands-on experience and training.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's funny, I want to backtrack for a moment because I do a class that I lead to a group of interns at a law firm every year. And we just did the class a couple of weeks ago. And one thing that I always tell people is, I know you said the professional email address, you know, there are still some people out there who have like sexylegs69@yahoo.com.
Oh,
and
my God.
Cousin or queen of seduction or whatever it might be. You know, I don't even know what names or what emails people have from their personal lives. But, you know, it's so easy to create a Gmail or any sort of account and just have first name dot middle initial dot last name 2018 at whatever the email address is. And I think it just makes it a lot more professional looking.
So much more professional looking. But on top of that, it actually serves another purpose. I always tell people it's a really nice way to kind of separate your personal life from your professional life. So you know that if you do create this new email that you put on your resume, anything that comes to that email, it's going to be high priority. You really want to make sure that you get back to people quickly. It's free from spelling errors, all that good stuff. So on top of making your resume look that much better, it actually helps you kind of organize your life and organize all of your emails.
That's actually really smart. I had never thought of that, of like you don't want to inadvertently miss an email or respond in an incorrect way. So I think that's a good point. And the other funny thing that one of the people who invited me to speak to the intern said is to make sure, A, that you have an appropriate voicemail or watch out whatever your ringtone is that people call, because that could be offensive. But the thing that had never occurred to me before is if you are job hunting, delete your old voicemails, because this particular law firm that had me come and speak to their interns said she recently went to give an intern an offer. Their voicemail was full. They tried that person twice, and then they wound up not giving the person the offer because they couldn't reach them.
Yeah, I've actually had that a lot with clients, and I just had someone recently that they contacted me. I tried to call them back. Their voicemail was full. And then they reached out to me again, and they said, well, I never heard from you. I called you right back, but your voicemail was full. So, you know, it's something so simple, but it's not something you always realize. On that same note, if you really want to separate things out, this is just another thought, but you actually can do a whole new Google Voice number, have a professional voicemail, and then again, you're even further separating your business and your pleasure. So it really keeps things nice and simple and clean.
Yeah, I think that's a great piece of advice. And what are your thoughts on adding your LinkedIn URL to your resume? Is that something that is a good or a bad idea?
I actually don't like it. I think that's contrary to a lot of people's beliefs, but the way that I always like to explain it is if you're doing LinkedIn correctly, someone should easily be able to search your name, search job title or company and find you quickly. There's no need to clutter up the resume because I think the more information you add to that header, the more kind of cluttered it looks. And with a resume, one of the keys is not only that you have all the right information, but that you can easily pick out pertinent information. So I would say instead of adding that link onto your resume and making it more cluttered, just make sure your LinkedIn profile is optimized, that you're easily searchable. Again, your first name, last name, and your job title or company should be sufficient.
You know, it's funny because in all the classes that I've done over the years and so forth, I've always been a fan of putting it on there. I hear your point. The one place where I will agree to disagree is that if you're using your LinkedIn URL and, for example, you have a very common name, like, for example, I'm Jennifer Hill. And unfortunately, there are 5 million Jennifer Hills out there who all have very similar names. So sometimes I find that if you have a more common name, no matter how optimized you are, it can be a little bit harder to find you. And so maybe something to do so you don't clutter the resume then is to include it in the signature of your email just to have your LinkedIn there. And again, only if your LinkedIn is clear, it's up to date, you have great endorsements or recommendations, then you want to be sure to be referencing it. However, if you don't have a good, clean, well put together LinkedIn, or if your LinkedIn contradicts with anything on your resume, you have to be extra careful and take steps to prevent that from hurting your job search.
Yes, everything you just said is so completely true. I mean, I think it comes down to, again, it's what's right for everyone. So again, if you're not going to optimize your LinkedIn profile, if it's not correct information or you really haven't done anything to it, I definitely would not include it. If you do have a great profile, as long as your resume isn't cluttered, I don't think it's that big of an issue. My biggest concern is when people try to cram everything onto that resume and there's so much information crammed onto it, it doesn't matter what's on it because no one's going to read it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And so what are your thoughts as far as how many bullets, you know, we're talking about? I understand that, what did you call it, the top part, not summary of qualifications, you called it something else.
Oh, I said a headlining statement.
Headlining statement.
Is that what you're talking?
Yeah, exactly. So we start with a headlining statement. Then maybe you highlight your skills. Then perhaps say you have your work experience. I don't know about you. I'm a huge fan of having a company with the title below it and then dates on the right. So company on the left with the title on the left and dates on the right. Is there any forms to that or thoughts that you have about whether or not that's a good or a bad idea?
No, I think that's perfect. And it also, when the company is on the top, it allows you to, if you've had multiple roles at the same company, I always say there's not really a need to write the same company down multiple times. So if the company is at the top, you can list multiple roles under that, which makes it really easy.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And so what are your thoughts on bullets? I've heard so many different things over the years. How many bullets should you have per position?
You know, it's interesting that you ask that because I don't really have a number. My goal when it comes to bullets is to have really results-driven bullets. I don't really want to include a bullet if it's a general job duty. You know, again, my rule of thumb is I want to create a client, a resume that is very results driven and not task and achieve or not task driven, very achievements and results driven. So those bullets, there doesn't need to be too many because really you want it to be really to the point and succinct. But if you are feeling like you're leaving a whole lot of your achievements or very notable achievements out, then there's probably an issue. So I don't really have a number. It really, for me, goes based on feel and just kind of cutting out the fluff.
You know, my thoughts on the bullets thing, and again, this is just something arbitrary that I came up with years ago, is it was just kind of like one bullet per year of experience there. However,
I love that.
Yeah, it's just an arbitrary thing. But what I found to be very helpful is also if you're newer to a field, you also want to emphasize the work that you enjoy doing and that you want to continue to do and de-emphasize and do less bullets. So if there was a job you might have been at for 5 years, but it was in a completely different industry than the direction you're taking your career, maybe instead of doing 5 bullets, you do 2 there and then 5 in the job that you've been at for a year or two to emphasize what you have been doing. So it's kind of just a weird little rule of thumb that I came up with years ago that I found to be somewhat helpful for people.
That's super helpful. It's actually along the lines I always tell people when they're first kind of starting a resume, a lot of people tend to say, okay, let me create a great resume, and then I'll figure out what kind of jobs I apply to. But I always tell people to actually figure out what kind of jobs you're interested in applying to before you write your resume, so you can really focus your resume correctly. But one of the things I always tell people to do is make a list of things that they enjoy doing. So not just things that they're good at and skills that they are very strong at, but skills that they enjoy doing and they want to learn more of, so they can see really what direction and what focus to put where on their resume. So it just goes along with that bullet point, just like you were saying.
And I know a question I get asked a lot is, how long should a resume be? Is the one-page thing standard? Is it okay to go longer than a page? What are your thoughts on that?
Again, it really depends on the person. I always say, if you can fit everything on one page and it's clean, it's legible, you're not leaving a whole lot of information off, it's always great to have a one-page resume. Now, it really depends on your field. There are a lot of fields, whether it's corporate security or engineering, anything like that, that needs a lot of technical skill, a lot of certifications, they'll generally be longer than a page, just because there are a lot of specific, like, texts and certifications and all sorts of stuff that needs to be on there. But again, it really comes down to, do you feel like you are on that page? Do you feel that someone has a clear snapshot of who you are on that page? So if it does take longer than a page to do that, by all means, go longer than a page. But if you are a third of a page or less onto the second page, you can figure out a way to cut it down.
Yeah, and it's funny that I remember years ago, somebody had once told me that, and it's true, being a recruiter, I'm sure you've been a recruiter as well and realize this, human resources professionals and recruiters really only scan the first two-thirds of the first page of the resume. And it's not an intentional, mm-hmm. malicious thing. It's just a time thing, is that if you don't capture our attention, it's like real estate. And if there's not a clear sign that says buy me, you know, in the first two-thirds of that first page, then most of the time, a lot of the recruiters and HR professionals I know just delete the resume, even if the person has perfect experience. But if I don't see it on that first page, or especially the first two-thirds of the first page, and it's on the second or third page, you will likely be passed on for that particular position.
Totally. And that's why I think it's so important to have those skills and those certifications, all that really important information up at the top, so that someone can immediately tell if you're qualified or not. And then they can go on to get more detail if they decide that they want to look into you further or they want to pursue you. But hopefully someone can look at, just like you're saying, the first two-thirds of a page of your resume and get an idea on whether they want to look more in depth at your qualifications or not.
So how many years should somebody go back on a resume? What are your thoughts on that?
I always say 10 to 15 years. But if there are, again, it really depends, because I've had clients that have had one job for the last 25 years. And in that case, I'm not going to only put the last 10 years, I'll put the whole job. But really, I say you don't need to go back more than that. If you do have a lot longer and a lot more relevant experience farther back, you could also just put previous experience with, and if they are notable companies, you could do that. But I don't think it makes a whole lot of a difference. You can always use that in an interview and say, oh, back when I worked at whatever company, or back when I had this role, I did this. But as far as current experience, I always say 10 to 15 years.
You know, I think that there are two caveats that I give people of where I would say to go back. I totally agree with you, as like 10 to 15 is the perfect amount of time to go back. And I think that there are two times that you might want to go longer than 10 to 15 years. And one is if your prior work experience, say that maybe in 1999, you did marketing work until 2004. Well, okay, that's over 15 years ago. But you want to get back into marketing after having been in sales for 15 years, then in those circumstances where you have older relevant experience that's nowhere reflected in the most recent 15 years, I think sometimes in those circumstances it can be helpful to incorporate that back into the resume. Or the other thing that I see a lot of is lack of stability. So it's funny in this job market, because I feel like stability has become a less valued thing by both employees and employers. But still, if you send a resume to an employer with 5 or 10 years of stability, they're going to be more likely to click on that resume than somebody who maybe moves every 2 years. So the other caveat
Oh, totally.
Yeah, and the other caveat I sometimes suggest to people is that let's say that you've had, for whatever reason, jobs every 2 years for the last 10 years. But then before that, maybe 2000 to 2006, you had a 6-year stint of stability. Even if it goes past that 10-year mark, it can sometimes be helpful just to show an employer that you've had longevity at some place in the recent past.
That makes complete sense. And I actually just want to back up to one thing that you were saying about the relevant experience that's farther back. I completely agree with you having that farther experience or that relevant experience, even if it's farther back. But I always like to tell people another really good way to kind of gain more relevant experience that's more current is to volunteer or take on side projects or even take little online courses, stuff like that, so that you can put some more relevant work experience, but have it be more current. So at least you can kind of tie from your old work experience into current work and show how you're trying to get back into that field. I think it's a really great way to kind of gain more tangible experience to put on your resume.
Yeah, I think that's a great, great piece of advice. I remember in 2009, the market crashed and a lot of, you know, obviously real estate was not doing well, nor were law firms. And so this one particular assistant, she was a legal secretary in the real estate arena, had spent 20 years with a major law firm, and she got laid off along with many other people. Well, during that 2 to 3 year sabbatical where there were literally zero jobs, what she did is she volunteered doing administrative work with charities that she believed in. And then lo and behold, when 2 to 3 years later, the first transactional job came up in her area, she was the one to get hired on it because that's exactly what she did. She put at the top of her resume that she had been volunteering to keep her skills fresh, and they hired her based on that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so important. And I mean, they've done a lot of studies recently that it really doesn't matter if you've been getting paid for the work or not. It's just about the experience that you've been able to gain. So I think a lot of the times people tend to forget or they tend to push aside volunteer work, side projects, anything like that, because they say, oh, I wasn't hired to do this. It clearly doesn't matter that much, but it makes a huge difference and it can absolutely be the factor that gets you the job.
Yeah, and you can even use it for a career transition. I know for myself, years ago, I used to be chairperson of the American Wine Society in LA, and it was a volunteer thing that I did on the side. And at one point, I toyed with the idea of getting out of recruiting and going into the wine world, and I created a whole resume just based on my volunteer experience in the wine world and started getting interviews. So it's something that you can use to leverage to transition into a new field as well.
Absolutely. And I think that's one thing that's really empowering when people notice is that you really can change how people view you just based on your experience and highlighting the right information on a resume. Because really, you can have the same person's work experience and highlight two completely different fields with two completely different resumes. Again, still using that exact same work experience, just highlighting different aspects of it. So it's really empowering when you think of it like that and say, hey, you know what? I have the power to transition careers, or I have the power to show people what I want them to see and get farther in one aspect of my career that I really enjoy.
Yeah, I think that's great. And I know another common thing that's a debate that goes on with a lot of people in the resume world is, what do you do? Do you do a reverse chronological resume or a functional resume? And for, let me just give everybody who's out there listening and might not visually be able to imagine what this looks like. A functional style resume is basically a cumulative list of your skills at the top of your resume, and then somewhere along the bottom, you might have dates and company titles, or you might not, versus a reverse chronological resume starts with your most present position and then works its way backwards, going back those 10 or 15 years that we discussed. So what are your thoughts on the pros versus cons of each of those?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to hear your thoughts on this as well, but what I always like to do is I kind of like to do a hybrid. So that's how I've developed when I say I put the summary of qualifications and those skills at the top. That's kind of, in a sense, taken from a functional resume where you really want to highlight the skills that you want an employer to focus on up at the top of the resume and then go into the reverse chronological. Because in my experience, and again, I'd love to get your 2 cents on this, but recruiters will ask when you worked for a company, whether you put it on your resume or not. So if you don't put it on there, it just adds an extra step. So that's why I kind of like to do a hybrid and have that kind of functional style up at the top with the summary of qualifications and skills to highlight the aspects of your career that you want someone to see, and then go into the reverse chronological. Because just like when you were saying before, you may have marketing experience from 15, 20 years back, But if you want someone to focus on that on your resume, you want to highlight some of those skills up at the top so that when immediately when someone sees your resume, that's what they notice.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I would say that this concept of the hybrid reverse chronological functional has become a very popular model or format, rather, in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
In my experience, when I did a survey in preparing for my book years ago, I had asked 100 human resources professionals, what would they prefer if you took a straight, not a hybrid, but a straight functional resume versus a straight reverse chronological resume, which do they prefer? And 100 out of 100 human resources professionals said that they preferred the reverse chronological style. The reason for that being what you just indicated is that if you're doing a true functional style resume, it kind of covers up gaps. It covers up gaps in skills or employment. So in that way, it's good, but it's also a little bit ambiguous to the potential employer where they might not be able to be 100% clear where it was you did which duty. So to go back to the earlier point, there's going to be a time and appropriate time to use the functional resume. And again, that could be if you're a recent graduate and you want to pull from any scholastic experience you have or any internships, or if you're changing careers or if you have a lot of movement and it would make your resume too long. Yes, you know, if you need to, you could do a functional or a functional hybrid reverse chronological resume. But in general, I think employers prefer either reverse chronological or a combo of reverse chronological hybrid.
Absolutely. And it's funny because I actually had a recruiter recently tell me, they said, you know, when someone sends me a functional resume, I wonder what they're trying to hide.
Yep.
And, you know, you it just makes you wonder if someone won't put the dates on there. You immediately think, even if it's totally innocent, I feel like it immediately makes you think, what don't they want me to see? And that's never a good thing when it comes to recruiting.
Yeah, exactly. Is that you get kind of like a little bit nervous that somebody is trying to cover things up, or what is it they're trying to hide? And it's extra work. If you look at it from a human resources or a recruiter perspective and you put yourself in their shoes, they get God knows how many resumes every single day.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's an extra step that you've added in that on the other 50 candidates, they don't have to go through that step, they might not take the time to call you to get that point of clarification.
Oh, absolutely. I always say, you really, the whole point of a resume, and I think that's a very common misconception, is that people tend to think that a resume will get you a job. And I always tell people, a resume will get you an interview. The goal of a resume is to get you through those initial steps so that you can really show who you are. Your resume alone will not get you the job. You want your resume to be effective so that someone calls you and wants to learn more about you.
Yeah, totally agree. So let's talk about the things that won't get you an interview. What are some of the resume bloopers or the mistakes that people make on resumes?
You know, one of the things that I see is that people a lot of the time will search for job descriptions and they'll just copy and paste a job description from Google. And when I look at that, I say, you have nothing that shows what you do, what makes you unique. So definitely one of the biggest mistakes is, you know, just having a very general resume with no specific metrics or achievements. And then on top of that, you don't want to have one resume that you send everywhere and use, I don't know if you've heard this, but the spray and pray technique, where you just apply everywhere and hope something sticks. I mean, it's very transparent. Everyone can see through it. So that definitely will not get you a job. And then I think this is pretty, like, everyone should know this, but I'm going to say it because most people don't actually follow it, is that spelling and punctuation, huge, really big red flags.
Yeah. And, you know, to throw in one other thing is that there's spelling and punctuation, which just might be sloppiness or missing something, but a bigger issue that can actually lose you a job offer, and I've seen people make this mistake, is putting the wrong dates on their resume. And it might actually just be an innocent mistake. I remember many years ago, there was a job seeker whose resume had from April 1995 to present or something like that. And the client, when they went to extend the job offer to her, they said, great, you know, she accepted the offer. When the background check came back, it showed that she had actually started the job in 1995 in, say, it was July or August instead of April. And because that was misleading information and, you know, whether it was intentional or not, they rescinded the job offer. So be 100% clear. I mean, it sucks, but you have to be certain that anything you put on your resume is verifiable.
Yes, absolutely. And one other thing, even on that exact point, with spelling, it's not just in the body of your resume. You really need to make sure that your contact information is listed correctly. Because I've had people that put, it's just a typo, but they put a wrong phone number or a wrong letter in their email address and they can't get contacted. So someone thinks that either they don't care or they're sloppy and put the wrong phone number, but that alone can lose you the job instantly.
Yeah. And, you know, what are your thoughts on pictures on resumes? I know with LinkedIn, it's kind of made a little bit more acceptable because now people can Google you and see your picture. Do you think that there's ever an acceptable time to have a picture on a resume?
You know, it's not something I do. I think with certain fields, you know, the more creative field, something like that, it may be a little bit more acceptable. Again, it's not something I would do. It's not something I would necessarily recommend because I think that's exactly what LinkedIn is for. But, you know, we are coming into a society where people like something different. So I think at certain times, at certain fields, maybe in the, you know, creative or tech space, you could get away with it, but it's not something I would generally recommend.
Yeah, I think the rule that I've heard, and I don't know how, you know, obviously in the acting world or other worlds where sometimes people do it and they add their picture, but then I think it gets into some legal issues about EEOC because if you post a picture and you're, you know, of a different race, a gender, somebody could discriminate based on gender, race, all these different EEOC things. And how we all get around it now with LinkedIn blows my mind, which we do, but you just have to be very careful about that because then it might make an employer feel uncomfortable. And you also don't want to be discriminated against inadvertently.
Yeah. No, I mean, it definitely makes sense. Again, it's not something I would do, but I know if I say absolutely don't include one, there's going to be someone out there that's going to say, I included a resume or a picture on my resume and I got the job. So I'm sure there are exceptions to the scenario, but it's not something that I would generally do.
Oh, and another thing that just... you just triggered my mind on this, is be careful. Do not put your salary history or reasons for leaving on the resume. Every, you know, 100th resume I get, somebody will have their salary history. And for those of you who might not be aware of the California law that changed in January of this year, and I think it also went into effect last year in New York and Philadelphia, it's illegal for somebody to ask you how much you're making. And so you want to protect that information and be very careful with whom you share it, if at all, you know, especially depending on whatever state you're in.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think just like what you're saying, you want to protect your information. But on top of that, I mean, if you are getting a lower salary, who's to say that you should, you know, share that and not get the higher salary? You should be able to use your negotiation power, highlight your value, show what you've achieved, and negotiate that higher salary regardless of what you're getting paid currently.
Completely agree with you. So Lasse, let's talk a little bit about the difference between a resume and a CV. Can you elaborate on that for me?
Yeah, it's funny because I often get people that say, oh, I'd like a CV, but 90% of the time they really just want a resume. So a CV is really just an extended resume. It's much more in depth. And really, I find that it's most often used in science, higher education, research, or medicine, anywhere where you would have publications or research experience, anything like that. If you're not in those fields, like someone really won't have a sales CV. You really just want a good resume. But again, a CV is just a much more in-depth, much longer, much more detailed information about your employment history. It usually doesn't have that kind of caveat of you should only go back 10 to 15 years. Your CV usually includes everything because it is for those more specialized fields where they really want to see your entire employment history. But I'd say most of the time, unless you are in one of those specialized fields, if someone tells you they want a CV, I would ask them to elaborate on what information they want to include because most of the time, people just think CV sounds better than a resume, so they really just want a great resume.
That makes a lot of sense. Any other tips or anything that we haven't covered today, Michelle, that you want to make sure that the listeners are able to walk away from today's interview and say, wow, you know, I have what I need to go out and create my resume or to go and hire you perhaps?
Well, yes, I would love for you to hire me. I would love to help you. But really, I think what it comes down to is don't sell yourself short. Really look at yourself objectively and make a list of all that you've achieved. It can help you kind of, you know, better your mental state and really take note of all you've accomplished, but your resume should highlight your value. So really take it as an opportunity to show people what you have to offer and what you bring to the table. Make sure that it's unique. You don't want your resume to look like the person next to you. Even if you are in the same role, chances are you've had a lot of different achievements. So again, just really highlight who you are and what makes you unique, what you bring to the table. You want to be a solution to someone's problem. So if you can show the hiring manager how you will be a solution to their problem, which is that they're looking for someone to fill this job and, you know, achieve these tasks, that's how you'll get the job, or at least get into an interview.
Yeah, I completely agree with you on that. And one thing I know I always recommend to people is when you are doing the bullets, no matter how many you have, start every bullet with an action verb: facilitated, managed, yes, mentored, guided, and then immediately follow that with whatever the result is of what we call PEP, P-E-P, productivity, efficiency, and performance. And so if you start with an action verb followed by a piece of PEP or an example, then that's where you really get into the more results-driven resume.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, passive verbs, I find a lot of people use them, but active verbs definitely make a resume a lot stronger and more effective.
Awesome, Michelle. Well, thank you so much for your time working with me on this today. If you could, please tell everybody tuning in out there where they can find information in case they want to utilize you or your services.
Yeah, you guys can all find me at writestylesonline.com. So that's writestyles. online.com. And you can find me on social media by searching Write Styles. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. But I would love to hear from you. I really hope that I could provide you guys with some good information. But if I didn't cover anything or if you have any questions, feel free to reach out.
Thank you so much, Michelle. It's been a pleasure having you on the show today. And thank you so much to everybody tuning in. If you missed any portion of today's show, you can always find it after the show, immediately available for download under the latalkradio.com website on the Get Yourself the Job page. And that'll be at the bottom of the page under the archive section. You can find this show or any prior shows that we've done over the last 2.5 years. And additionally, if you're more of an iPod, iTunes sort of a person, you can also go to the podcast section of your iPhone and type in Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. You can download, listen at your leisure, subscribe, whatever is most convenient for you. And we certainly invite you to rate us or leave us any feedback or comments, because the show wouldn't be possible without you. So thank you for tuning in today. And thank you again for joining us today, Michelle.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.